right. Well, each year, I like to come back and revisit a certain topic. And the topic that I like to revisit, well, I miss Shanda bringing it up for you right here. Things I tend to forget. It seems that every year, as I study the Bible, I learn more about who God is. And I learn more about who he designed me to be, and I learn more about what he is asking me to do with my life. But as I learn more each year, I have to confess that along with the new discovery comes an unhealthy dose of forgetting as well. I forget simple spiritual truths that are there to keep me firmly planted as a follower of Christ. I forget more complex things about God that help me keep focused in troubling times. And I forget things that God has done, things that have happened, and things that he will do that will inspire me and cheer me on further in my walk. I forget those things. And so inevitably, every year, I find myself relearning and remembering and re-walking down roads that I've traveled before and roads that I've known. But I've also found that with each rediscovery, it takes me a little deeper into the truth. With each relearning, I become more and more sure of its validity and its power. And so tonight, I would like to share some of my forgettings and some of my relearnings with you. And who knows? Maybe you forgot some of these too. Now, the first two truths are very closely tied together, and they emerged for me at the same moment. The first thing I forgot was this. It's all about love. Now, 1 Corinthians 13, and also the book of 1 John, will tell us very clearly that this truth is what it is. But I want to tell you how it unfolded for me that maybe will help make this a little more clear for you. Kelly and I took a cruise not that long ago. We like to go on a cruise once or twice a year. They're inexpensive, and it's good to get away and kind of unplug from everything. And while we were on the cruise, they show movies all day long in your room, and I was watching one of them, and one of them took me by surprise. It was called The Soloist, and it's a story, true story, about a journalist in L.A. named Steve Lopez. And this journalist in L.A., he came across a homeless man living under the bridges in the warmth of L.A., a man named Nathaniel Ayers. And he saw that this man was living out of a basket, that all his things were broken, and he was dirty, and he had a very unhealthy place to live, an unsafe place to live. He was mentally challenged somewhat, that Steve couldn't figure all that out. And still, Steve put his arm around this Nathaniel Ayers and decided to help him. He wanted to change him and make him better. And so the whole movie is this whole concept of Steve trying to bring Nathaniel to a new place. Along the way, Steve realizes very early that Nathaniel has an ability, an incredible ability, at playing stringed instruments, playing the cello, and everything he owned was all broken. So one of the things that Steve brings to him is a cello as a gift. But he shows him that you have to use this in the right area. You have to take this to where you're going to be safe. And this whole process goes on and on and on, where Steve is constantly trying to move Nathaniel from the bridges, from homelessness, into an apartment, into some productivity, into a useful calling in life. And as I watched this movie, it started becoming very frustrating. But nothing was working. Nothing seemed to work. Nathaniel fought him all the way. With just craziness, it seemed. Steve would bring him all kinds of opportunity. Steve would bring him all kinds of help. And still, Nathaniel just seemed to not really connect with any of it. He brought him to an apartment, and he didn't want to be a part of it, and fought Steve to get out of the apartment. He took him to be heard by the town's orchestra director. And instead of being heard, he ran off stage. One by one, every opportunity that Steve brought to Nathaniel, Nathaniel blew every opportunity. Nothing seemed to be changing. At the end of the movie, Steve is talking with a friend who knows Nathaniel. And he says, yeah, I really don't think I've had any luck here. And the friend says, well, let me ask you a question. Can you simply love him Can you simply just be his friend with nothing more if the change never happens? And that was when God shot that arrow straight into my heart. Steve chronicled his relationship with Nathaniel in the newspaper. And people couldn't get enough of this article, this ongoing story. A chill ran through my whole body as I realized that God, at that moment, was using that movie to reteach me something I've known for a long time. And that's that the world will sit up and the world will take notice, not at our prophetic wisdom of end times. Many have offered great wisdom on the end times, and it hasn't changed the world much at all. The world will sit up and take notice, not of a certain thing that I won't do, an attitude of I don't do this. Just ask the Amish. The world will sit up and take notice, not of my great command of scriptures, because the world's greatest commentaries have been offered, and you can buy them or see them online. And yet the world has not been stunned. But, don't get me wrong, all those things are wonderful. But the greatest thing, the thing the world will sit up and take notice of, first and foremost, what we're called to do as Christians, is to love people. Now, in truth, that sounds very easy to do when we're sitting here, doesn't it? But can I relate to, and can I enjoy the company of people who are not just like me? Can I love someone and be their friend when they don't act as I wish they acted? Can we still maintain a close friendship when our friend blatantly chooses to do the wrong thing? Or does loving the good, the bad, and the ugly really mean only loving the good? Years ago, I learned this truth. People don't care how much you know till they know how much you care. Now, I don't know about you, but my life, Drew Kleinbell's life, runs at 195 miles per hour. And one of the ways that you make life work at that speed is you get things done, and you get them done fast. You ask someone to do something, you expect it done, and I mean now. You ask for communication, you keep your communication clear. You keep on track, and above all else, you keep your communication short. Watching that movie, though, The Soloist, and reading 1 Corinthians 13, showed me that I had somehow, my love was slipping away. My love was slipping away, and it had been replaced by counsel. My love had been replaced by wisdom, and it had been replaced by righteousness. All good things, guys, all good things. But they must be added to love. They cannot and should not replace love. I have a friend this year who decided they just could not do what God was asking them to do. They gave it the old college Christian try, but in the end, they chose a path that was not what God wanted, and they knew it. I counseled my friend to take a different path. I promoted God's wisdom to my friend. I laid out the difference between righteousness and obedience. Some Christians disowned my friend. Others told me to do the same. Can you see how this gets a little tricky? How this gets a little foggy? But God used a movie with a challenge in the end that simply said, can you just be his friend? God used that to get me to remember that love is the greatest. It is the most final, the most correct thing we can do. God tells us so in 1 Corinthians. I want to read this to you. 1 Corinthians 13. I've seen this on people's walls. I think it's wonderful that we have it on our walls, but I would much rather we have it on our hearts. Let me read this to you. This is what God is speaking to us about love. And it's very powerful if you really read this and take to heart what he's saying here. Paul wrote this, God speaking to us. If I speak with human eloquence, and if I speak with angelic ecstasy, but I don't love, I'm nothing but a creaking of a rusty gate. If I speak God's word with power, revealing all mysteries and making everything as plain as day, and if I have faith that says to this mountain, jump, and it jumps, but I don't love, I'm nothing. If I give everything I own to the poor, even go to the stake to be burned as a martyr, but I don't love, I've gotten nowhere. So no matter what I say, what I believe, and what I do, I'm bankrupt without love. You see, love never gives up. Love cares more for others than for self. Love doesn't want what it doesn't have. Love doesn't strut. It doesn't have a swelled head, doesn't force itself on others, isn't always me first, doesn't fly off at the handle, doesn't keep score of the sins of others, doesn't revel in others' grovel, takes pleasure in the flowering of truth, picks up or puts up with anything, trusts God always, always looks for the best, never looks back, but keeps going to the end. Love never dies. Inspired speech will be over someday. Praying in tongues will end. Understanding will reach its limit. We know only a portion of the truth, and what we say about God is always incomplete. But when the complete arrives, our incomplete will be canceled. When I was an infant at my mother's breast, I gurgled and cooed like an infant. When I grew up, I left those infant ways for good. We don't yet see things clearly. We're squinting in a fog, peering through a mist. But it won't be long before the weather clears and the sun shines bright. We'll see it all then. See it all as clearly as God sees us, knowing him directly just as he knows us. But for right now, until that completeness, we have three things to do to lead us towards that consummation. Trust steadily in God, hope unswervingly, and love extravagantly. But the best of those three is love. Now, gang, when all else fails, when you run out of things to say and you run out of things to do, and when right and wrong get confused in your mind, love. And so for me, I stand next to my imperfect friend. I still offer counsel. I still offer godly righteous wisdom. But the greatest thing I give is my love, because this is what's best for them. And I keep trusting in God, and I keep hoping. I will just do all of that while loving them. It's all about love. Lesson relearned. Lesson two. I can't change people, no matter how much I try or desire to. Like I said before, it goes hand in hand with number one, doesn't it? I can't change people no matter how much I desire and try to. Philippians 2:12 tells us this. It says, work out your own salvation with fear and trembling. Now, Steve Lopez, back to the story in the soloist, Steve Lopez in real life gave Nathaniel every opportunity to change. And it was a lot of work for Steve to get those opportunities for Nathaniel. Steve argued and chided and proved how change and opportunity was best for his friend. Steve suffered seemingly endless discouragement and even mistreatment watching his homeless, genius friend choose bad over good over and over and over and over again. And I thought of folks who I talk to, folks who want desperately to change a loved one. Folks who desperately, a child wanting to change a parent, a spouse wanting to change their mate, A friend wanting another friend to change. Well, God, with his wisdom, which is much greater than mine, says it doesn't work that way. We're not allowed to change people, no matter how good our intentions are and no matter how righteous the change is. God has made it clear that each of us must work out our own salvation with fear and trembling. What this verse tells us and what God is doing as far as our shaping of others is he is taking you and me out of the God department. He's taking us out of that. He is taking responsibility and liability for others' actions away from us. God is relieving us of the paralyzing, gut-wrenching turmoil we take ownership of when we watch someone fall or make a wrong decision. Think about this for a second. If you and I could change anyone or make anyone do what we felt they should do, where would that end? And where would we be today if someone else had made us do what they thought we should do? You see, God knows we can't handle that kind of power because we don't know everything. And we are not always right. God says, leave the changing of people in the hands of the individual and God. And let each one work out your own salvation with fear and trembling. God can handle it, guys. He set it up that way. Now, what can I do? Well, I can certainly have a hand in this mix. I can encourage. I can be a light. Here's the first thing. We can love them. We can want the best for them at our own expense, like we saw Steve do in The Soloist. What can I do? Well, I can give them truth. And I can give them grace. I can give them time. The third thing I can do is I can live the example of what God wants for us and for them. Showing, gang, showing is so crucially important. Back at my house in my office, I have, I guess for about the past year, I've been collecting manuals and books on how to fix cars. I've gotten into fixing cars more than motorcycles these days, and some of the books I got were on how to do body work on a car, and I've read these things over and over and over, and I'll tell you, for the life of me, I don't feel ready to do any body work on a car. And I've read the books. But you know, I remember back to my days hanging out down at the junkyard when I was in my early 20s when my buddy Ator would say, "Well, come, I'll show you." And he would teach me how to spray primer on a car. Oh no, you let go of the trigger on the end, then come back, squeeze again. And I painted my own car back then. There was something about him showing me what to do that gave me a confidence, that spurred me on. Him showing me how to do something was so much more important than reading about it or hearing about it. I needed that example that he provided for me. Jesus said that you and I, we are to be lights to a dark world. We are to be that example that shows them how to live. Don't tell them, show them. They will know we are followers of Jesus Christ by our love. You don't talk love, you show love. I can't change people. No matter how hard I try or desire to, but I can show them how to live a life following God, how to live a life of following God, what that looks like. I can be an example of what God offers. Lesson relearned. I can't change people, no matter how hard I try, but I can live an exemplary life to show them. The third thing and final thing that I learned this past year is love is not free, it's not cheap, and it's not easy. I'm getting my hands firmly around this concept that the most precious, the most rewarding, the most valued things in life are the things that we work hard for. The most precious, most rewarding, most valued things are the things that we invest our time into. The things that are most precious, most rewarding, most valued are the things that we sacrifice for. My friend has a hot rod that he loves. And so my friend invests loads and loads of blood, sweat, and tears into his hot rod. He works tirelessly on it. He sacrifices time, sacrifices money, and he sacrifices sleep to make this car the best. And that car means an awful lot to him. And he's proof that if we are to love the way Steve Lopez loved Nathaniel, it's going to cost, gang. It's going to cost time and effort, and it's going to cost your heart. Loving something is not easy. I watch parents give up things for themselves so their kids can have. How many moms are sleep deprived for their newborns? But those moms don't even bat an eye over it. Dads put hobbies on garage shelves and divert their time so they can make Junior all that his dreams want him to be. Love, loving something, it's not easy. And loving something is not free. We talked about living by example. Well, God is the best picture of that. What God gave to make you and me, which is his most precious possession, what he gave was all he could, and it wasn't cheap. What God endured to provide eternal life for us, his most valuable prize, it was not easy. God sacrificed the best he had so that he could have you and me. And God says that's one thing that we can never forget. Something that we must constantly relearn, something we must come back to over and over again and get a greater handle on. So I want to do that tonight. Tonight, we're going to celebrate communion.